This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, welcome everyone. It's Vision 2024, Carm Capriotto with my friend Greg Bunch. Hi, Greg.
Hello, glad to be here.
Transformers Institute. Man, oh man. Great company. Your legacy is unbelievable, having had your own shops and went through your own struggle to get where you are today. I imagine what credibility you have talking in front of people saying, oh, been there, done that.
Well, a lot of times I start my presentations saying, don't trust anybody without a limp. So I definitely walk with a limp. And if a mistake has been made or crazy situation, I probably can relate.
I get it. We're sponsored here by Napa Auto Care. Always thankful to Jason Rainey and his team there. So Napa Auto Care. If you're not a Napa Auto Care member, you really need to consider being one.
Remember, if you earn your living in the service aftermarket, then Apex is the expo for you. Continue listening, and we'll bring you the latest from Apex 2024. Save the date, November 5th through the 7th, 2024. Hey, for over 30 years, Napa Trax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the best, most comprehensive SMS in the industry. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find Napa Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com.
Ed Mylett was here, gave the keynote this morning. It was very emotional, very interesting. Never heard him speak before. Talked about pain, living in pain. And once we get out of pain, we never want to have it again.
Right.
Think about shop owners today that kind of rise to a certain level and then they never get any higher because they don't want to go back to where they were. And what Ed said this morning was you can't get comfortable with not having pain. If you want to grow, you have to experience pain, figure out your issues, and then move forward with that and be out of pain a little while, but not forever.
Yeah. I talk quite a bit about getting out of our comfort zones.
Yeah.
And because it's magnetic pull to be comfortable, right? I joke around that downstairs in my house, right, we've got kind of the TV room. And I happen to put the home gym where you have to cross, you got to walk by the couch and the big screen TV on the way to the gym. And you're like, yeah, you know what? I'm just going to stop here and watch something before I head down to the gym. I got to switch places there. But if you think about it, just human nature is all about comfort, right? We've got air conditioning everywhere we go. Nobody wants to be outside of the 68 to 72 degrees anymore. And you think about where humans have come in survival mode and being out of comfort zones, but yet in the last 30 years, everything is about being more comfortable. And that kills us. Both it's in our health, and it certainly can kill us in our professional development, in our businesses.
Wow, you're so right. When Greg came into the studio this morning, let's talk about these two things. And we spent a half hour talking about stuff because you're so good to talk to. And one of the things that I wanted to talk about was delegation. And his eyes lit up because it's going to be featured in some of his training that you're doing here. And one of the things that I worry about and that I'm concerned about is that as an individual, as a former technician who is now a shop owner, who is really learning to try to be a CEO of his company and taking certain steps, is delegation one of the hardest things to figure out what you need to do?
Absolutely. And it's a great topic to talk about. And in fact, we're here at Vision for if you're don't know when you're going to listen to this, but right now we're at Vision. That's just gotten started. And so this afternoon, I'm going to be moderating a second in command panel.
Perfect.
And so I'm not sure who all is going to be there. I know who's going to be on stage with me, but I don't know as far as the audience who's going to be there. But the idea of the technician that moved into management, that moved into shop ownership, and Vern Harnish talks about this in the book Scaling Up. And basically, I've got a slide that he says it better than more eloquently than I'll be able to say it. But basically, if you look at small business in America, very, very few small businesses grow beyond 10 or 11 people. And the reason that is because you've got the business owner who's the smartest guy in the room, usually. And he just says, you know what? I need help at the front counter. I need help changing oil. I need help doing social media posting. I need help doing some bookkeeping, right? So we get all these helpers built around us and can only manage about 10 or 11 people. So that's really, if you look at the landscape of small business in America, that's where most people stop. Now, if you're going to grow past that, you have to completely have a different paradigm shift, which is what I'm going to be talking about tomorrow, called 10X Turbocharge Your Life and Business. And that is about what is a 10X mindset? What is a 10X actions? What does that really mean? And in both of these presentations, I have a slide that is called Educate, Delegate, Elevate.
Powerful.
So breaking that down, number one, you got to get out of the mindset that I have to be the smartest guy. You've got to say, you know what? I need to hire a technician that's better than me. I need to hire a manager that's better than me, a salesperson, a parts person, a bookkeeper, a marketer, whatever that is. But step one is to educate. So, Carm, I'm the master technician. I can diagnose anything. I'm the guy that, you know, all the dealerships send their cars to. I am the master, right? So I think, hey, I'm going to go start my own shop. Call it master technician, right? So I'm master tech and everybody comes to me because I'm so good. Now, that's fine if that's what you want. But if you ever want to grow past that, if you ever want to 10X your life, you've got to get out from behind the shop and work on your business, right? We've talked about that for years. You've talked about that for years in your podcast. So you're going to have to bring somebody in and maybe they're almost as good as you. Let's just say that you got lucky. I know everybody's like, I'd love to hire that guy, right? But let's say you find that person. You still have to educate. Here's all the scan tools. Here's how we fix cars. Here's our diagnostic process. Here's our computer program. Here's how we do inspections. Here's my business model. Here's how we charge, right? All of those things, you've got to educate that person in order to delegate that role of being the shop foreman, master technician, head diagnostic person that you have been famous for doing. Now, what a lot of shop owners do is say, well, I want that to be my son. I want that to be my legacy. Okay, great. Understand that could be a 5 or 6 year process, but you have to start that process of education. And one thing I'll be talking about later today is for those of us that have been in the industry a long time, we never looked at being an automotive technician as a team sport. It's very much individual, right? Yeah, okay, yeah. Here's your bay, here's your parts, you know, here's your flat rate hours. Somebody needs help next door to you. You're like, that's taken away from my paycheck. I don't have time for this. And fortunately, as much dysfunction in the culture and some of the shops I grew up in, I wouldn't have got to be a very good technician if I didn't have some people that I could go ask and get some help from. But for the most part, especially if you get into bigger organization, it's kind of dog eat dog. And unfortunately built, you know, we talked earlier about culture, right? We've built that culture based on our pay plans, just based on the way a traditional automotive shop runs. And so you move from being very individual and going, okay, I've never really had to train somebody. And so we don't know how to educate people. And we don't know how to train people. And the grumpy master tech says, I showed you once. How come you didn't figure it out? Well, you think about, well, how many times did you have to practice it and break a bolt before you figured it out?
I love what you're saying. I think we all look at education as a heavy lift inside our levels of responsibility because I'm doing all this other stuff, trying to keep everything floating. Life goes on, family, all the crises that exist every minute of the day. And on top of that, I've got to educate this individual. No, I don't think you have to do it by yourself or alone. Right. And I think the creativity of finding resources or having a peer, a friend, a coaching company, a training company, conferences to go to as far as that career development, educational opportunity. No, you don't have to do the whole heavy lift.
And that's, we talk about professional development, and that's not something that anybody, that's not a terminology that's been used in the automotive world really at all. I'm going to bring somebody in. What is my professional development plan? So, you know, going back to my example, hey, in 5 years, you to take over my role as the super tech in the business. Okay, that's going to be me training you. That's going to be sending you to Vision, sending you to other industry events, subscribing to this online training. All of these components go into making sure that you're ready to take on that role, right? So that's the education piece. And depending on who you have and where you want them to be within your organization, what their dreams and goals are, all that has to be put into the mix. But we have to take time to do that. If I'm under a hood 12 hours a day, when am I going to find time to put a professional development plan together for somebody that's coming to work for me?
Right.
So we got to talk about the education element, wherever that is. We could run through the same analogy for a manager, for a service advisor, for anybody in our organization. So step one, before we can delegate, we have to educate.
Yeah.
And remember, I talked about walking with a limp, and I'll be talking about this later today in my second in command panel, and being transparent that I have tried to shortcut that education piece, thinking, oh, you know what, CARM's really, really good. I'm just going to throw them the keys. I got other stuff to do. And then looking in the rearview mirror going, what did that cost me?
Because he's seen me. He's watched me. I'm assuming, it's my son. He's got the genes.
Right.
Wrong.
Or I read it on your resume.
Yeah. We make too many assumptions that people will exactly know what it is that we expect from them and how it affects everyone around them. Oh, got to be a leader. Where do you get that training? It just doesn't come natural.
Right. It's not prolific in our industry. I went from a technician to a service advisor to back to a technician, then back to an advisor, then into management, and then to shop ownership.
You needed a good manager.
You know how much formal training I had for any of that?
Probably none.
Almost none.
Yeah.
Like literally, I'm like, okay, manager, get a new business card. Like, what does that mean? How do I hold a team accountable? How do I do any of that? Yeah. Like, I had the title, but looking back on it like that, I didn't have any training. I was thrown into that. And then we wonder why we have attrition, why people are stressed out, why people are dying young. Well, look at what we've done in our industry. We don't ever put professional training development into practice. Now, I work with a lot of top shops in America now, and they have put professional development. They do have people in our key leader program and our COO program. Dan Taylor's been a regular on your
team, right? Love Dan Taylor.
Like, man, he has been transformational for the industry to, hey, guys, don't just throw people into these jobs. They need to know how to do it, what's expected of them, how to overcome those challenges.
If you went to Apex 2023, then you realize the incredible commitment that Apex has to the service professional, shop owner, technician, and service advisor. Joe's Garage is your place to hang out with 10 working bays and real live working conditions. Also, the best tech companies, from tools and repair to management software, had their latest and greatest on display and demonstrated for you. You also attended technical and business management training with the industry's best and brightest trainers, coaches, and teachers. Work is underway to make next year's Apex 2024 have even more product demos, trending training, marketing, and social media support to help you grow your career, sales, and profits. Remember, if you earn your living in the service aftermarket, then Apex is the expo for you. Continue listening, and we'll bring you the latest from Apex 2024. Save the date, November 5th through the 7th, 2024. Let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NapaTrax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NapaTrax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NapaTrax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com.
Go to my website, remarkableresults.biz, type in Dan Taylor, type in Greg Bunch, and you'll hear some really great episodes from him. The thing is, when you say educate, delegate, and elevate, there's a point in time when we think we've done it and delegated enough, and we still walk away. And I don't believe in any person's role, no matter how big the company gets, they can walk away from the responsibilities that they've given. They need to be sure and hold people accountable for what they delegated. And then the training doesn't stop. And I think that goes to your elevate point.
Right. So you got to get out from underneath the hood. Remember the rant I did, take your toolbox home.
Oh, yeah, that was so good. Yeah.
So
was that For the Record back in the day?
I think so. Yeah. That was our 10 minute.
Yeah.
You're like, great, give me 10 minutes. Here we go.
All right.
So, but don't do that till you've educated somebody, right? You can't just take your toolbox home and then there's nobody there to fix cars or diagnose them correctly, right? So you have to educate, and then you delegate, and now you become somebody that oversees it, holds people accountable, but you're not getting your hands dirty. I tell people, like, okay, imagine if a technician from another state called you up and said, hey, can you help me figure this out? You probably would, right? And you may say, okay, let me FaceTime. Let me show you what's going on. Let me let you listen to it. Let me fax you, right? Let me email you over the wiring diagram. And so can it be done? There's remote services that help people diagnose all the time. They don't have to be in the base. So I'm saying, don't get your hands dirty. Like, I am not getting my hands dirty. I'll help you. I'll tell you what to do. I'll tell you what to test. But that's that next step in education.
That's a great point. Take your toolbox home, or don't get your hands dirty. We're always willing to tell people the answer.
Right.
Because we want to sound smart, or we want it to happen quick.
Both. Hmm. We don't have time. And if my dad ever hears this, he'll be 90 this month.
God bless him.
Probably won't hear this, but I love my dad. He's a great man. But growing up, he was always very, very busy. And so looking back on it, and I struggled with a little bit of forgiveness of my dad. Like, my dad could have literally been one of those guys that built a house from scratch. He knew enough about plumbing, electrical, construction. I saw him do all this stuff, welding, but he never slowed down to teach me and show me.
Yeah.
And it's like, I didn't want to be his helper. I wanted to learn how to weld. And I remember, like, I was holding a can, cold water. And, you know, I remember him getting mad at me when I dropped the can because he tried to put a hot piece in there. And he was helping me on a project that I wanted to do, but he just didn't have the patience to slow down and be a teacher. And I could say maybe I did a little bit better with my kids, but still kind of in that same, I'm too busy to slow down and teach somebody. So you really have to approach this with a different mindset. And when you're busy, how do we slow down and educate people?
I had a grandpa who taught me all that.
Mm.
My dad was busy running the business.
Yeah.
He'd come home for dinner for a half hour, and that was probably all I saw him in the formative years. And when I started to hang out with my grandpa, he taught me how to do things that I still use today.
That's great.
So I had someone to show me. I don't disrespect my dad for doing that, but thank God I had grandpa. But he died when I was a senior in high school, so there was a lot that he probably could continue to teach me, but he didn't have a chance. And then I was going to be off to college, so I don't know what that happened. But thank you for bringing me back to that memory.
Of course.
You know, who taught me how to... Oh, my God. I want to do an episode. I was just thinking of it when I was listening to Ed Milet, Tracy. And I was thinking, I was writing down all the things that he was talking about his dad. And I started to write down all the things that went on in my life that maybe people would like to know someday, because it's all about my guest and it's never about me. And I started to write down almost 20 things that it's like, how did you get to this particular stage in life? I mean, I wasn't a podcaster forever. And I had businesses and worked in corporate America for all these years. But what were the formative years like when you had to write, when you got punished in sixth grade because you talked in the hallway? How severe was it that you still remember it to this day, crystal clear? And I have to share that on an episode one day, exactly what transpired.
Yeah, people.
But yeah, thanks for bringing that up. And I think it's important. Boy, it's so important that we don't give up on the elevation of our people once we think they have it, and that we continue to get them education.
So one of my mentors years ago told me the story, and he was in telecom, and he was a executive level, so he'd seen a lot. And he said, you know, there were two companies that started out at the same time. And both are founders. So we'll call founder A built a $100 million company, which we can all say, wow, that guy's a stud, right? But he said building out in telecom, and that was the Wild West back in the day where there was so much opportunity, you could really, really scale a telecom business. It's probably back in the 80s, I assume.
Are you talking like MCI or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Right, telecom. But this guy, like as much as he built and as successful as we would all say, I want to read the book of a guy that built a $100 million company. Like he said in the conference room, nobody could pick the color of the carpet. He had to be the final decision maker of literally what chairs do we have, what color carpet. Now, he said the lesson learned is there was another guy that started a telecom company that built a $3 billion company with a B in the same amount of time, whatever it was, 7, 10 years, whatever that was, where he said the difference was this guy knew how to educate, delegate, and elevate. The other guy was a control freak.
Right.
And as much as he wanted to grow, he had to be involved in all of the micro decision making and have his hands in it. So how does that apply to what we're talking about? Coaching a lot of different people, being in a lot of different shops. A lot of shops have stopped growing because of the owner's inability to educate, delegate, and elevate. They stop there and say, if I'm not here, what's going to happen? They're missing the mark. And again, can we say, is that what they want? Probably. Is that their comfort zone, like we talked about earlier? Absolutely. But what price are they paying for the rest of their lives by staying in that role versus going, I'm going to stretch myself. I'm going to get out of my comfort zone and I'm going to educate, delegate, and elevate. And I want to see how far I can take this thing.
Yeah. Control freaks, do they hire coaches?
Mm, some of them do.
Okay. Then you recognize that pretty much early on in the relationship. And can you change them?
Not always.
See,
I would say we have some success stories because some people, when the light bulb goes off, they're like, holy nights, this is what's holding me back. Let me go take that cold shower, right? Let me get out of my comfort zone and move forward. And other people, 2 years into it, take your toolbox home, get out from underneath these behind the counter, from behind the toolbox. Oh, so-and-so didn't show up today. Oh, I got to do this. I got to do that. And about 2 years into it, you're like, this isn't going to work.
It's like the control freak is driving into work in the morning and saying, what do I want to do today? Work the counter? Do I want to diagnose a vehicle? Do I want to do a timing job? Do I want to pay the bills? And then they go do that and they don't pay attention to the business.
Right. Think about this, Carm. Why did most people get into their automotive industry? For one of two reasons, or both, really, because they like fixing cars, they like cars, and they like helping people. And both of those have the same thread, and that is they're problem solvers, right? Whether it's solving people problems or solving car problems, we like solving problems. And so when we go in, We like solving problems. It makes us feel good, builds our self-esteem. Hey, Tracy didn't know how to do this. I stepped over and helped her and I got it fixed. Carm didn't know how to fix this or had a trouble with this customer. I stepped in and I fixed it. And we go home and we say, who's better than me? I'm a problem solver. I fixed everybody's problem. In fact, when I got home, the stove had a problem. The door wasn't working right. And I fixed that for my wife. Like, man, it's been a great day. And that's okay. That's going to get us to a certain point.
Right.
But at what degree does that now become detrimental to the growth of ourselves, our people, and our businesses?
So here's my thought about control freaks. I know some guys that have recently, within the last year, gotten into coaching. And they would come up to me because I was always an advocate for them to get in it and say to me, you've got to do this, you've got to do this. Well, I finally did, they say. And they were control freaks to the point where if they didn't decide to do this on their own, they weren't brought in kicking and screaming. So from a coach's perspective, he's got an individual at their most vulnerable, knowing that I can't go any lower in my business, in my life, and where I want to be. So it's almost like you get the control freak who is saying, I no longer want to be. And then those probably make incredible clients. You probably transform their life and their business to degrees they never thought about.
But you have to break the addiction. So what happens—
That's a great point.
—is they're used to doing all the problem solving. And I talk about this in a number of my classes. They will literally, this happened to me, and I'm not quite the control freak than a lot of other shop owners are. I wouldn't be where I'm at. But I still went through withdrawals, meaning that, okay, today I'm going to work from home, right? I've got a marketing plan I got to write. I've got a job description I got to write. Like, I'm going to stay home. I can concentrate and be in front of my computer. But you're anxious, like 2 hours go by and nobody calls you and says, hey, boss, we got a problem. Can you help us solve it? And you're like, well, they don't need me anymore. I'm not solving problems. I don't feel good. This is uncomfortable. 11 o'clock comes by. We call them. Hey, what's going on? Everything's fine, boss. Why? What's up? Well, what about this? What about that? What about Miss Jones' car? Did that ever get fixed? No, we're still waiting. Okay, did anybody call NAPA or whatever to get the part? Did, you know, or can we run somebody like, let me jump in and help you. Let me work on fixing this. Okay, all right. They needed me. They didn't know they needed me, but they needed me. And then now we feel good for a couple more hours. And then it's like, gosh darn it, why aren't they calling me? And here's the danger, right? What firefighters, right? Sometimes they get arrested for what? Being arsonists. So seen that happen where these guys, they will go in subconsciously and start fires in their shop to be able to put them out, to be able to say, I solved the problem. Look at me. I feel good. And meanwhile, they're literally setting fire to their business, to their people, to their customers, and they don't even know it. So talk about a coach. You have to operate at a pretty high level to be able to see through that and help somebody navigate their addiction to solving problems.
Psychologist, maybe?
Yeah.
Think about a coach with a new client trying to figure each other out. Maybe you're doing some assessments, a lot of assessments to help that individual feel where they fit in their own business. And you get done with a call, a visit, and you walk away saying, do I have the energy to take this person to the top of the mountain? It's got to be so stressful for an individual who is fighting you all the way.
So I gave this analogy the other day, and it's very appropriate to what we're talking about. So as a shop owner, I remember the first time it happens, you get a customer that says, hey, I don't want to put that money into my car. And you say, okay, fine, I'll give you $300. And in the back of our mind, we're thinking, man, $500, I can pay Joe, the technician, buy my parts at wholesale, $500. I'll be $800 into this car and I can go put it on Craigslist for $5,000. And so we do that and we're like, man, we should be in the used car business. This is fantastic. Let's do this again, right? So we do it 3 or 4 times. And all of a sudden now we're going on the internet. We're researching, hey, what does it take to get a used car license? What blah, 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 right? And we've made buckets of money on selling 4 or 5 different cars. And you're like, man, I have hit the pot of gold. I can't believe I wasn't doing this earlier. And then we get into the used car business. Oh, okay. Now we got to go get a license. We got to have special insurance. And now we've developed this whole new business that's now a real business and it's real work. And it's like, now what have I done? Right now we got all these cars that we got to fix. And now my technicians are mad because my service riders are mad because now whose car is a priority? Did we fix the boss's car? We don't get paid as much. And then all of a sudden you're like, what on earth have I done? And so I bring that up when shop owners say, oh yeah, I want to coach. You're like, yeah, this is easy. I just tell people what to do. No problem. Now you get in really into the coaching business and you're like, okay, this is a real business. We got real personality, real people, real tools. It's a whole nother world when you truly get into this business. And like you said, now you got to become a psychologist. You're not necessarily, yes, you're dealing with systems and processes and education, but a lot of the coaching is managing their personality, them as people, the staff that they're working with, and different coaches approach it differently, right? Some are very systematic. Today, we're going to talk about numbers. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about this. But I find that a lot of my clients, like they have something that is really urgent. And they need to unpack that. And 9 times out of 10, as you know, they're people issues, not necessarily operational issues.
I am sitting here with my mind spinning about your analogy about just because I own a great business, I could become a coach. Just because I fixed a car, I could be in the used car business. Imagine the word frustration came to mind, Greg. Here I am, even if I go to work for a coach part-time. And I get a few clients. You're carrying the weight of their frustrations on top of yours.
Sure.
And trying to get them to get off top dead center and do some of the right things in the business. It's whatever the 50 things that you look at, that you worry about, that you're trying to shape, move and change. I can't imagine. I think it's got to be a really tough business to carry the success or the failures as a frustration through not only your own world and your own life. You're actually asking for, I don't want to use the word punishment, but sometimes that's what it could be.
Sure.
Wow.
And it's tough because like there's somebody that, and they didn't say this directly to me, and I was the one personally involved in their coaching. So it's not like somebody had asked him, hey, how come you're not working with Greg anymore? Oh, I just wasn't getting the value. And it like, you talk about a knife through the heart. Like, are you kidding me? Like I put a lot of work into this company, working with the owner, with a second in command, breaking down communication issues, helping them get their numbers right. It was like I wanted to like reach out and be like, are you blank kidding me? Mm-hmm. Right. And then I've got other clients that go, man, Greg, if it weren't for you, you know, we've gone from $3 million in annual sales and barely making any money. This year, we're going to hit $16 million. We've got an infrastructure in place. Like we could not have done this without you. Mm-hmm. And you go, wow. I get it's still me. I still give the same advice to these two different diametrically opposed. Like, what is the difference?
Well, I don't think you can win them all.
No.
And okay, I'll tell you what that person meant. I didn't get any value. I dropped the ball. I was the stubborn one. I love pain. They were just trying to, well, you're a smart guy. Well, I didn't see any value. I wasn't getting any value. And I'm not saying it's a cop out. And maybe there are occasions where that really does happen. The connection wasn't there, that maybe the patience wasn't there to get someone to the next level. But every story has a story behind it.
Right.
That's exactly what it is.
And so it's go back to the used car analogy. It's like, man, I did everything right. Customer bought the car in 2 weeks, the engine blew up. Like, who would have known? So as people are, I don't know, we probably got off track a little bit there, but as far as a coaching relationship, the student and what somebody, I would not tell somebody just go hire a coach for a coach's sake unless you're really willing to be a student and say, I'm going to submit, I'm going to learn, I'm going to get out of my comfort zone, right? What we started this podcast talking about and do what somebody's telling them to do, as long as the trust is there. If you believe that that person has the skills and abilities to get you there, then why would you fight that?
I think you just summed it up. Maybe I am not getting any value because I don't have the trust. And it's a two-way thing. I mean, people who don't have trust for each other aren't going to have a happy relationship.
Right.
And they classify that as having value. I mean, it's like people doing terrible reviews online for just the sake of doing one because they didn't like how you looked at me.
Right.
Anyway, going down rabbit holes is stuff that I like to do. So thank you very much. Are you going to do your Transformers event again this year?
Absolutely.
Great. Where's it
going to
be?
It is going to be north of Denver. And so we are bringing it stateside. It's going to, I think, open it up to people that want to know more about Transformers, what we're doing, how we're doing it. Last couple of years, obviously, we've done that down in Mexico. And I do realize, right, it's a barrier to entry, right? You got to have a passport, be willing to travel international, cost a little bit more down there than it is going to be to come to our event the week after Thanksgiving here in the North Denver area. So I'll make sure you get some information there. And
yeah, I will say this. If you've never been to a Transformers event, it's phenomenal. The speakers you've had, the way you present, the classes, just good stuff. And we were, Tracy and I were at one of them, and we were so lucky to have a couple of great interviews, but we also hung out with John DeJulius.
Yes.
His
voice still resonates through the Transformers family. So he gave.
And it should. We talked about him last night at dinner, I think, didn't we, Tracy? Yeah, we did. We were talking about haircuts and stuff. He's got a great story. One final thing, let me ask you about what kind of benefits do we have to keep and retain our great technicians that work in our industry?
That is a great question, Carm. Anything and everything, right? The kitchen sink.
Got it.
Yeah. You remember back in the day when everybody wanted, you know, the .com thing and everybody needed programmers and it was like, oh, you want a massage? Yep, we got that.
Oh,
you know,
right.
Bring your dog to work? Yep, we got that.
Right.
You know, all of these different, you want a latte machine? Yep, we got that. So there's two sides to that coin, obviously, that we have to have aggressive pay plans. We have to have aggressive benefit packages. Everybody wants health insurance. Everybody wants a retirement. Everybody wants to be, you know, paid a fair wage. But going back to the original conversation is people want a good culture and people want to be happy where they go to work. People want we talked earlier, right? Professional development. If I come here, where am I going to be 5 years, 10 years working for your company? They want us to have they want to follow somebody that's got a vision. And so when you talk to a 72-year-old shop owner that's worn out and the shop looks like crap and there's stuff everywhere and hasn't had a paint job in 15 years and they're crusty and burned out and don't want to be there, but they don't have any other choice. And they tell me, I can't find a technician. Well, who the heck wants to work for that, right? There's no future there. Right. So it's not just about the benefit package, but it's about what kind of future do I have working for your organization? What is your dreams? What are your goals? Where are you going to take this thing? And I think that's a missing link when it comes to recruiting and hiring is, again, we're going to talk about this in my second in command panel. Like Kenneth and Marcus didn't come to work for me because I got all my stuff together. They came to work for me because they saw that I have a vision and I want to change the industry. I want to be the best and I need good people to be able to do that. And I need your talents to be a part of that. And here's where we're going to go with that. And if I would have just said, hey, I just want to keep things status quo. I want to stay in my comfort zone, right? Just go back and fix cars and shut up. You're not going to be able to attract good people.
Great advice, my friend Greg Bunch, Transformers Institute. Thanks for being here, man.
You bet. Thanks for listening. Thanks for hearing me out.
No problem.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.